I was like, when they were nice to me in the other store, I first went to a Judaica store and they're like, no, go to Morse Farm, like a store that only sells Farm. I was like, each time I go in, I'm like pleasantly surprised at how nice and how just like with Menschlichtig they just treat you. Like, it's just really nice. And then here you just go to another store and it's just.
Everybody's different. Okay. Did we actually start the Gemara in class in Bava not at all?
No.
That's what we're up to, right?
Yeah, yes.
Okay. So I was talking to many of you during Chavrusa time, what exactly is the case. There are so many factors in this case. So, to start this off, the Gemara starts off by citing a Braisa. So first thing is just to get through the Braisa, just the Braisa, and to know what the Braisa said. So what's going to end up happening is we're going to have a Braisa, and then after that, the Gemara is going to challenge something that the Braisa said. And then the Gemara is going to resolve the challenge, and that's it. A Braisa, a challenge, and a resolution. That's it. That's it. Now, so let's start off piece by piece. The first thing is just to explain to me simply what the Braisa said. Nothing more. Who can do that? Victoria, yes.
Okay. There's a man and a woman. They're men.
Okay.
The man gives the woman a
kippah. What do you mean he gives her a kippah? He paid the ksuba?
Oh,
you talking about the shtar ksuba? What are you talking about?
Okay, so I was going to say that he gave her the ksuba.
I don't know what that means. That's why I'm asking, what do you mean he gave her a ksuba? What are you trying to say about that? What did he do?
Part of the ketubah is that if they get the...
1 second. Let's make sure we're all on the same page. Explain to me this whole thing about a ksuba. How does this work? Forget about the Gemara. We're not just going to discuss ksuva. Just tell me what the law is, or how does it play out, just basic facts, yeah?
So the purpose of a ketubah, a man gives a woman a ketubah, why?
When?
When they get married.
So you're talking about the document?
Yes.
What we call the shtar ksuva. Okay. So let's just stop with that. We all know that when a man marries a woman, he has to give her a shtar ksuba. Now, and actually, if you would be in the Kabbalah's Panim where the room is, what also happens, so in that room before the chuppah, the shtar ksuba is written up. And all the blanks are filled in, the names, the date, the place where the wedding is taking place. And also, what does the groom do? So of course he's sitting there and everybody's running up the shtar ksuva. Now that shtar ksuva is going to be read under the chuppah. Then after it's read, the groom, the chassan, will then present to the kala that very shtar ksuva. And she hangs on to that, forever, indefinitely, fine. Now, in the Kabbalah's Panim, besides the fact that a shtar ksuva is also written, he also does a kinyan sudar. You know, but this
we discussed this, like he picks up a pen, gives it to the rabbi. So
for
now,
what purpose?
So now it's as if the rabbi is going to be accepting on behalf of the
accepting what? That's what I'm asking. What is happening? What are they doing?
The man is giving the ksuba to the...
He gives it to her under the chuppah. What are they doing? Why do they do a kinyan sudra? Yeah.
Isn't this going back to like the first day? Like we said, the purpose of...
I don't know. What first
meaning,
who's
let's say him... Let's say you want to say him picking up the pen. Now...
Why is he doing this?
To form a, well, you're making me think that I'm wrong. to form. So it sort of makes me think that there's like now an official, like, this is probably not the right word to use, but zika between the man and the woman, and they both have rights to each other. Like, she can't be with other.
What? She can't what?
Like, she cannot be with other men now.
That's what the Kedushin does. That's not what this pen is.
Well, I know it can't be that he's acquiring her, so that's something else.
No. What is this whole thing about the pen in the Kabbalah's Panim? What that Kenyan Sutta, what is it for? Yeah.
With the, in the Kabbalah's Panim, it's when he writes the Ketubah.
Well, the Ketubah is being written.
So it's that.
And it's also, what else besides that? And actually, before the Ketubah is signed, the rabbi turns to the groom and says, you need to make a Kenyan Sutta.
They're exchanging.
I just want to know what the purpose of the Kenyan Sutta is.
What do they do as
In this Kenyan Sutta, the rabbi or whoever is officiating, this said is right, that the rabbi is standing in the place of the Kala, and the rabbi hands to the chassan, could be a pen, it could be any kli, and apparently when he picks it up, well, that's what you have to figure out. What is happening?
When the rabbi picks it up,
the rabbi hands it to the chassan, and the chassan takes it and then gives it back. What's going on? What are they doing?
He takes possession.
Of what?
Of the ketubah.
Takes possession of the ketubah. I have no idea what that means. What do you mean takes possession of the ketubah?
Because the ketubah is a kinyan, it's a contract, so she has to be present in some way, and she's usually not there.
Contract for? He's going to give it to her under the chuppah after they read it. He's going to hand it.
Yeah, but he's signing the terms beforehand. So in order
for two items signed, he doesn't sign the
document. Right, but in order for her to agree to these terms, besides for her accepting the ketubah, then she has to be present in some way.
Okay. All right. Let's start.
And he can't go back.
What happens is, let's talk about, forget about my question, I'll come back to my question, Yeshua. What is the whole purpose of this whole concept of a ksuva? What is this all about? I'm not asking you about the document, I'm asking you about the whole concept. Yes, what is happening?
That if they were to get a divorce,
yes,
that she would receive money in order to be able to sustain herself.
Okay. The idea of the ksuvah is that if down the road they get divorced, or this, another possible scenario.
Or if he dies.
Who died?
The chatan, doesn't
he? The husband. So if down the road they get divorced, or he died before she did, in either one of those situations, he has to pay out a certain amount of money to her. And this is what the ksuvah is. The ksuvah is that he is indebted to her in case they get divorced or in case he dies. Of course, if they get divorced, then he has to pay it. If he dies, then the money would come out of the estate. It would have to be paid to the widow. So let's make up numbers. Let's say the amount. Now, this ksuvah, there are actually three parts to the ksuvah. There's what we call the Iker HaKsuvah. There's what we call the Tosefes HaKsuva. I don't know what the third part is. It's called
the
Dunya. So each part does represent a certain amount of money. I don't want to get into all the different parts. But let's say the Sach HaKol, all these three parts amount to $50,000. So that means if he divorces his wife, besides whatever settlements they make, he owes her. He has to pay her $50,000. That's what the ksuvah. So the shtar ksuvah that they wrote, that was written, the Kabbalah's Panim before the chuppah, that shtar is attesting to the debt that he owes her if their marriage ends in divorce for his death. So the shtar is the legal document that she hangs on to, because who owes who money? He owes her. So she's think of her like he's like a borrower, if you want to compare it to something, and she's like the lender. She's the creditor. You understand why she's the creditor? Because he owes her money. Now, how do you create that debt? Because the debt. When does that debt? When does that debt begin?
When you can have the pen divorce.
When does the debt commence? At the time of the marriage.
What does that mean at the time of the marriage?
He's indebted to her if, what, with a big if underlined 10 times, if he divorces her. But that debt that he would have if he divorces her already exists when they got married.
Well, at what point during the marriage? When he gets
her to Kitubah? Now, so that could occur in one of two ways. The debt would be incurred the moment he gives her the shtark suva under the chuppah, or, now can somebody tell me, or when he takes the pen or whatever he uses, he is incurring the debt at that very moment.
Why don't they just wait until
okay, there's a reason why it is done then, because it has to do with the date in the document.
In case we're
afraid if we date it now, but let's say until they get to the chuppah, it'll be the evening, and it'll be the next day, and that would be a shtar mukdam, which is pasul. But if you made a kinyan suder during the daytime, then even though the shtar wasn't handed over until the nighttime, the indebtedness begins from the time that the kinyan suder was made. Catch all that?
Yeah.
So that's why we do a kinyan suda. That way we don't have to worry if until they get to the chuppah it's prolonged and let's say it's a late afternoon wedding. We're running close to shkia. So you don't have to worry. So we'll do a kinyan suda and then it doesn't matter, even though it's been stated today. But today's day is, well, we do the Hebrew because it's the 30th. So it could be that maybe the chuppah is not going to be until it's technically the 31st. You understand the purpose of, I don't want to get into it. Okay. Anyway, so the kinyan suder starts the obligation towards the ksuba from the moment he picked up the pen. Now, of course, when does he have to pay off his debt? Only if he dies or divorced. Now, if they don't get divorced, and let's say she dies before him, then that will be a debt that he'll never have to pay. You understand? Yeah.
Let's say if they, God forbid, he passes away in poverty and doesn't have the money to pay her.
Well, he owes her the money. If there's no money to pay it, so then she's out of luck.
Okay. If they were to have children, would that be their obligation to pay their mother's
estate? Well, it would come out of the estate. If you tell them there's no money in the estate, then they don't have to pay. It's not their obligation. Just that if there's an estate, then the debt is in the estate, so then it would have to come. Except if there's no estate, it's totally penniless. Totally. It's true about anybody who owes money, whether they're penniless. Then the creditor has got a lot. What can you do? It happens. All right. So now we come now to our case. Okay, who can start us off? What happened? Yeah?
A person in the bride's
house. Oh, you were saying the Torah.
No, you do it.
I don't mind
either. Okay, all right. Go ahead.
A person finds on the street a receipt that a man has paid his wife the ketubah.
Now, you said that it was found on the street. Did we talk about this at all?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did anybody learn that way, that it was found on the street?
Mm-hmm. It was just found.
Why not? Well, where was it when it was found? Where was it?
That's why we said found on the street.
Is that important?
Yeah, it's specifically like not in his house or not in her house. Like it has to be somewhere that doesn't belong to him.
If it was important, it would have said like the place.
No, but I think it's on the Mishnah.
Okay. So this, so the truth is, if you, which I, it's so fine if you didn't even realize it. This whole thing about finding
was in the Mishnah originally.
The previous Mishnah, if you look back, you'll see there's a whole bunch of cases about this star, you find that star. This is talking, see, this is significant. We're talking that it's not that what the man or the woman had the star, and somehow we're now discussing it. The case is a star was found on the street. Who found it?
Someone.
Bystander. Nobody. No one has any relevance to the situation. And then what did this bystander do with this? He looks at the document, and he sees it's a show there, which we'll discuss exactly what that is. What does he do with it?
He brings it to Bezdin.
That's the case. And now Bezdin has to figure out what on earth they should do with this show there. Now, what is a show there? It's a receipt. Shogar's receipt. So forget about this a second. Typically, why do you write a receipt? Well, what's this all about? Let's say if I owe McKenna $10,000 and I paid it off, I'll demand a receipt from McKenna. I'll want a receipt. Is that why I would want one?
If I ever come into court and try to claim that you never paid me, you'll just pull out the receipt and say I did.
Right. So a reason why I might want a receipt is this way I can feel safe that you're not going to try to trick me and come back and try to claim you did a second time. All right. So anybody who pays off a debt, but they typically would like to have a receipt. Now there are other ways too, but let's talk about getting a receipt. So let's say in the case of a ksuva, who owes who money?
Husband
owes the wife, so she's in a sense like a creditor. So if the debt would be paid off, and who would give who the receipt?
She
would give to him. Now, if we look at the shofar, what will you find on the shofar? Well, you'll find a date. It'll say, I so-and-so, let's say if it's the woman. Miriam, hereby acknowledge that my husband, Reuven, paid off the ksuva debt to me. And then what would be at the bottom of the shofar? Two witnesses would sign. And typically in a normal case, where let's say he paid her the ksuva, she would hand him a shofar. The shofar is dated, there's a content to the shtar, and then it's signed. Like any shtar follows the same pattern of any shtar. Now, here though, this shtar, which was dated, let's say it was dated in Nisan, right? It was found on the street. So when the courts and the shtar and the shofar is brought into Bezdin, what is it that Bezdin does not know?
Was it actually paid or not?
You don't know who lost the shtar. Somebody lost the shtar. Somebody dropped it on the street. What are her choices? Either she dropped it.
He dropped it.
Now, if she dropped it, that would imply, why would she still be having it?
Because
he didn't pay the ksuva yet. Maybe she got it ready and whatever, and then she dropped it on the street. Of course, if he dropped it, that would mean what?
That
the ksuva was paid, that she had given him the receipt. So, but the courts don't know. So what are the courts going to do? We'll call in the husband and wife into court. What do you say about this? This is where the brisa comes in and says what? Now, apparently, what does the husband say? Now, the brisa didn't tell you, but you should be able to figure it out on your own.
He says he pays.
And therefore he claims that who should the shofar be given to?
Him.
So now, but the brisa focuses on what she says. So what does the brisa say? It's mansha yisha moda. You follow? So if the woman admits what?
That it was paid.
That he paid me the ksuba, he paid it off, and that the shover, I gave him the shover, so presumably I didn't lose it. So I gave it to him. So what does the braisa say if she's motivated to that? Then the courts will get return the shover to the husband. Because after all, the courts have nothing to worry about, and so we think. He says he paid it. She says he paid me. So what's there to worry about? So the price says, if he says he's paid, he paid it. And more importantly, she says, I agree that he paid me the ksuba. So then, in that situation, says the braisa, you return the shofar to the husband. Now, what's a little bit funny, not know if it's funny, Rashi explained in the case that what? Look at the Rashi of Matsa Shofar. See the Rashi, I feel a little sore. Could you just read the Rashi?
Oh yeah, just inside read it.
Yeah.
Shekatvay Shalabala, Kavalti Ketubatiya, the Odes Hatav.
I'm interested in the last two words. What's the Odes mean?
Because she's still married to him.
In other words, apparently the Shofar was written, they're still married. Now, we don't know whether this is in anticipation of a divorce, but what is the shofar saying? That even though they're still married,
prepaid.
So like, almost like you prepaid for ksuba. Now, what's wrong with that? Nothing. So the shofar says, it's kabalti ksuba se, I received my ksuba payment. Okay. That's what it says.
It doesn't make a difference that they're not living together for us.
Who says they're not living together?
Oh, does that just assume?
I don't know.
It could just be that I think you told us that he's concerned that he won't have the money later on.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm making it up. I have no idea.
Right, but that
maybe he's worried that he wants to prepay it because maybe he's concerned that he won't have money later, so he has the money now. So he wants to whatever the reasons are. So they're still married. She's still living with him. And she already, and the shofar says that I received the ksuba. Right. And so if she is moda that she gave him the shofar, which means he paid off the ksuba, that's what the braisa says. So then we return the ksuba. So we return the shofar to the husband. That's what I want to focus on. The Gemara then has a problem with this. Right. Gemara challenges it. One doesn't understand something here. What is it that the Gemara, who can tell me? Sahaba, can you tell me what the Gemara asks
on
this braisa?
Oh, on this braisa? Yeah. We're worried that she's lying.
What do we tell me exactly what we're worried about?
We're worried that she wrote out this note, that she just had this shofar as her secret in, and she goes to someone to try and tell her to see what she
wants.
Okay, take out what I just said. We're worried that even though she said she got paid, she didn't actually get paid.
So we're worried that he didn't pay her.
We're worried that he did not pay her.
At all. She comes into, what does she say in court?
She said she got paid.
Right. So the courts, though, are afraid not to believe her. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
And why would we think that?
Because we think we got into that, we're not sure, but let's say we're worried that she basically told, she sold, it says that she sold her, worried that she sold her ketubah.
Well, that's part of our concern.
She sold her ketubah, because when you sell your ketubah.
When did she sell it?
She sold it, let's say she wrote out, and she sold it between Nisan and Tishrei, so she wrote the.
Why is Nisan and Tishrei relevant dates for you?
Because she wrote the shofar in Nisan, and she was.
Well, how do we know that?
Because it said, no.
over. Say it over. How do we know that?
It's
dated. It's dated, right? You look at the date on the show, but it says Nisan.
And she wasn't going to get paid until Tishrei.
That's what I'm not following.
Or they weren't going to be divorced.
Let me ask you a different question. When is the whole court case occurring?
After Tishrei.
Isn't that true?
What's after Tishrei?
This whole court case.
Right.
It's after Tishrei.
Does it have to be after Tishrei or can it be in Tishrei?
Okay, it's after. It doesn't matter.
Okay, I was wondering.
So, now, the shover that she admits, she says she got paid, and she says, return the shover to my husband. The shover is dated Nisan. Those are the facts.
Right.
I was telling some of you during Pardusa time, you have to be able to separate what are the facts that the courts know, and what are the suspicions that the courts are worried about. Suspicion means that you don't have the facts, but you're suspicious of maybe this, maybe that, right? So what are the facts that we know? What we know is there is a shover, it's dated Nisan. Another fact that the courts have is she is admitting in court that the ksuba was paid. So let me ask you, so she says it was paid. Okay, now, and that's why the Brisa said, well, she's admitting it was paid.
And he admits.
And he also says, I paid it. So the Brisa says, return the shofar to the husband. Now, what is the Gemara concern? That what?
That we're concerned that she's lying.
So it wasn't paid at all?
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. So then what's your concern? Why would she admit that it was paid if he still owes her the money?
Because it brings in... if the Gemara continues and tells us that if she sold her ketubah to some, if you have like a shtarfel, right? So to make this example clear, let's say the kind of borrows money for me $100 for me, and she owes me $100, and I like can't wait for her to pay me the money. I need the money, so I sell my shtarfel to Avital. Which means that McKenna eventually gives me the money, it goes straight to Avital.
So she pays you the money? Or
she pays it straight to Avital. She pays it to Avital. I take it out. But Shmuel says...
Oh, we're talking about who's that Shmuel? I'm not there yet.
Fine.
Don't bring in Shmuel.
Okay, not bringing Shmuel. So then, if I decide to forgive McKenna because...
No, you're bringing in Shmuel.
Okay, so that's a shtarfel. So the ketubah is a shtarfel.
Yes.
So I sell my ketubah. So husband and wife, the wife sells her ketubah because she just can't wait.
Is she allowed to sell it?
She's allowed to sell it.
So what's the problem?
So we're worried is that she sells her ketubah, but she says, when I get paid, I'll give you...
No, if she sold the ketubah, then who collects the ketubah?
The chaos.
The buyer, not she anymore.
Okay.
So then what?
So...
If she was never paid, and she sold the ksuba to a third party,
so
then what's the problem?
Because she says she got paid. Because then in court she says she got paid.
You just told me you're worried that maybe she didn't get paid. So what's your worry?
Because she was more in court that she got paid.
I'm confused. So what are you worried about?
That she's lying.
You don't.
Then she's not.
If she's lying, so what concerns you if she's lying?
And Lil Kayach is going to lose out.
Is there some illegality that's going to...
Yeah, because Lil Kayach is going to lose out.
How will he lose out?
Because he'll never get paid from the husband. The husband will never pay the Lil Kayach. And we're...
The husband, why won't the husband pay? If you say you're worried that that maybe it was not paid.
Yes.
Okay. So that if it was not, that's your worry?
No, because if it wasn't paid, or maybe it wasn't ready paid, maybe it wasn't ready paid. We understood that it wasn't paid.
Well, if it wasn't paid, then nobody will be cheated.
Yes, but then if she's in court...
So then what are you worried about?
We're worried that it wasn't ready paid.
What do you mean by already?
That she told the okay, it wasn't paid, but it was actually already paid.
When?
When she wrote the receipt.
It was paid.
It was paid already.
So then she had no right to sell the debt.
She had no right to sell the debt.
And if she did sell it, so she cheated the buyer.
She cheated the buyer, yes.
Okay, so what about that?
So we're worried when she admits in court.
So that's not a problem for the courts.
Why not? The little chaos is going to lose out on the money. She made money on selling something that's not...
Okay, so then if that ever happens, will we take her to court? He'll take her to court.
Okay.
I think at that moment, you're making me chavla, because you're causing me to lose out on money. But I don't know if I'm jumping a few steps ahead.
You're talking about Shmuel now?
No,
this has nothing to do with Shmuel. Yes.
We're worried that she predated the shomer, which is then going to disqualify.
Predated it? Don't use the word predate.
Okay. That she wrote that it was that the shomer. She wrote that.
Not
he
predated.
Paid her, we're worried that she wrote that he paid her Nissan when he only
What's
paid her.
What's the date in the shomer?
Nissan.
Did she write it in Nissan?
Yes.
Yes.
But he only paid her in Tishrei.
Okay.
And if this shomer is seen by the court as valid, it would then disqualify any sale of her ketubah, which happened in ER or Nissan.
Okay, and if it would, then what's the problem?
Then this other guy is going to lose out. This other guy, who bought her ketubah rightfully, because at that point, the ketubah had not been paid, he's going to lose out.
Okay. I don't know if everybody understands this. Let me say it again. The problem is this. The shover is dated Nissan. Okay, the shover is dated Nissan. We see that. What does she say in court?
I got paid.
And apparently, when does she say she got paid? In Nisa. It's dated Nisa. She says she got paid, and she's saying, return the shofar to my husband. Ask the Gemara. Maybe she's lying, but the lie is not that she was never paid. Maybe he did pay the ksuba. But maybe it was not paid in Nisan. The shomer is dated Nisan. But the fear is, this is what the courts are worried now about, that maybe she had prepared the shomer in Nisan expecting payment next year. And then at the last minute, he told her, you know, I'm really sorry. I don't have the money now, it'll have to wait. And he paid her off 6 months later in Tishrei. And she what? What did she do in Tishrei after she got paid? After he paid her?
She said, after he paid her, what did she do in Tishrei?
Yeah, what did she do?
She says...
Just in Tishrei, what did she do with the shomer?
She gave it back, she gave it to him.
She gave it to him. So she's saying in court that she had given him the shomer and that she admits that he was paid. But maybe the case is not that it was paid in Nisa. The fear is... But maybe that part is not true. It was paid. But maybe he paid it 6 months later. And why would that matter? That would matter for the following reason. Because let's say if the ksuba was not yet paid in Nisan, that means who still owns the debt? The woman. Now, technically, if she wanted to, let's say an ER, right, it wasn't paid yet. The fear is that it wasn't paid. Not until Tishrei. That means an ER, he still owed her the money of the ksuba. Let's be afraid that she sold her rights to the ksuba to a third party. Now, this is very common, you know, that people sell, you can sell a debt. Like in my house, I have a mortgage, so I took out a mortgage from one bank, and I got a letter 5 years later saying that the bank sold my mortgage to another bank. They don't need my permission, they just, as a courtesy, they inform me of it, that I'll be making now all my future payments to this new bank. You understand? Now, one bank could sell debts to other banks, which is done all the time. So, the same thing is true. Any creditor can sell a debt to a third party. Now, of course, when you do sell a debt, typically, you're not going to sell it at the price of the debt. What I mean by that is, let's say if it's a debt of $10,000. Yeah, let's say Tzivia owes me $10,000 and I'm going to sell it now to Racheli. She's not going to buy it for $10,000, but she won't make any money on it. nobody will buy it. Because, so how much would she be willing to spend?
Like 9,000.
Less than 10. Now, we'll negotiate. I'm going to try to get the price as high as possible, and Rachel's going to try to give it as low as possible. But I have to make it worth her while to buy, because she's running a risk. Let's say if it's the ksuva, if I'm selling the ksuva, what's the risk?
If she dies.
If she dies before the husband, then no ksuva will ever be paid. So that means the buyer made an investment and lost out. Understand what I just said?
Mm-hmm. How would someone ever buy it, though? But with a ksuva, it's so risky.
So you buy it for $100 and you have the chance of getting $10,000.
Why not?
Oh, because
especially
she
needs
the money now,
she's going to be willing to
well,
sell it for
it
less.
All depends how desperate the seller is.
Also, why is it such an investment? Meaning that, like, if
you
she says
you're
going to
get... risk of making a 200% profit. It's like people who buy stocks. Why does anybody ever buy a stock?
Okay.
It might go down, you might lose everything, but it might go up and become a millionaire. That's the dream. Like buying a lottery. Why do people buy lotteries?
So he'll lose everything. We'll look at he'll lose everything if she dies.
Before him. But
if they stay together,
if he dies, well, eventually somebody's going to die.
It's a really risky investment.
What if he could die first, though, before that ever happened? Like,
but
then
if
the
he
buyer
dies,
himself
it
die.
Doesn't
oh.
matter. Then the buyer's children would inherit.
Oh, okay,
death.
Fine.
Look, maybe he knows that he's sick. Maybe he knows their marriage is in trouble.
And we're assuming that she would sell her debt because she owes money to this lokea, or she just wants to make money. I mean, she starts,
money.
She's selling the ketubah to a lokea.
To get money, she needs cash.
Risking losing that money. Risking losing the
buyer.
Yeah. None of the woman.
Well, she's gaining money.
She's gaining money, but if her husband dies, then she won't receive the lokea.
Yeah, for her, she makes her cheshbon, but for her, she needs the cash now, and it's worth it. It wasn't worth it, she wouldn't sell it to her. So I think she's desperate for cash. And she's willing to take a $5,000 hit to have the cash, even though it's much less than the ksuva amount. A lot of people do that. Yeah.
Okay, now this is off topic.
So then let's stick to topic.
It's never
crazy
like that. Just ask
again.
Yeah.
No, why shouldn't you?
I wanted to give them a chance to tell me not to ask.
Good. Okay. So what's our fear? Our fear is what? Maybe, yeah, it's true that he paid the ksuva, but maybe he didn't pay it until 6 months later, in Tishrei. And what did she do in Iyar? What's our fear?
She sold
the ksuva to a third party. Now, in Iyar, if our fear is correct that he didn't pay her until Tishrei, was the sale a valid sale?
Yes.
Yes, it was. There was a debt that this buyer purchased. Is that clear, everybody? It's a valid sale. Okay. So that means if it is a valid sale, if this marriage ends in divorce, then who should the husband be paying the ksuva to the third party, to the buyer? Now, our fear is, what's our fear? Well, the thing is, if we return the shover to the husband, what is the date in the shoulder?
Nisan.
What is the husband going to say?
He paid it.
That helped, but we know he paid it when?
When Nisan.
Nisan. He's going to claim that he paid off the ksuva in Nisan.
Why though?
One second.
Based on the shoulder.
And if he does that, and if that's the case, then the buyer will lose. Why?
Because he didn't buy anything, there was no debt.
There was no debt to buy. It was already paid off. He bought this debt thinking that, right? Now the truth though is, who's being cheated here?
The
Lokea. The Lokea.
Shouldn't you investigate that? Come on. Sorry.
Okay.
But it's such an odd case, you wouldn't even think to ask.
It wasn't in there. What, he tried, that's all he didn't know. He was very trusting. Do I know? So therefore, if we return the shofar to the husband, there is a chance that what?
Somebody else would be
that
hurt.
Somebody else could be hurt. could be cheated, not just cheated. So therefore, what Mara is asking is, maybe we shouldn't be returning the shofar to the husband, even if she admits that he paid. Because our fear is that maybe he didn't pay it in Nisan, but he paid it 6 months later, and that maybe she sold the ksuba in Nir. Now, as far as fact, do we know for a fact that she sold the ksuba in Nir to somebody?
No.
No, we don't know that for a fact. This is all part of our suspicion. In other words, what the courts are worried about is, if we return the shofar to him today, what if next month some buyer comes and saying, oh, what happened? I bought this ksuba and I can't collect. So the courts don't want to do something that could end up cheating a buyer.
But why would the husband lie? Is saying that he paid a Nisan.
Maybe he and the wife aren't the
least. Like the case with my kind
of. But this whole case, you can also play out in a way where, like, no one does anything. Like bemazed or in cahoots or in fact to lie.
The point,
like,
though, is, but we are worried that maybe, in other words, the courts have a responsibility that whatever action they take should not end up cheating somebody. So they're always going to side on the side of caution. Now, so let me ask you the following question. You need to tell me every time a person walks in with a shtar, we right away suspect, even though it's dated, maybe he wasn't paid until 6 months later. Is this routine that we always worry?
No.
Here's because I'm not relying on the witnesses who had signed. There were witnesses for this shogar.
Well, they signed it.
They signed it, but we're not asking them. All we're relying on is from Hota.
Well, what do you mean? The shogar says Nisa, and two agents signed it.
Yeah, but the agents are not there.
You don't need them to
be
there. As long as we verify the signatures, the shtar is like a statement of Adam. That the show that this was written and that the ksuba was paid in Nisan.
I thought they didn't have to be there.
Well, they don't. You just have to verify the signatures are not a forgery. They don't have to come in. They don't have to. They don't testify. The shtar is testifying. Yeah.
I have a clarification question. If this shogar was signed in Nisan by these two agents to say, like, she received the money and, like, she's being honest when she says this, but she didn't receive the money till Tishrei. Why is that document a real document?
Well, she claims that she received the ksuba. She kind of.
But it didn't happen until Tishrei.
We don't know that.
But in a case when that does happen, what?
We don't know that. But we are suspicious that maybe. Now, if a woman goes over to Tishrei and says, "Look, you know, my husband just paid off the ksuba. Please write up a receipt for him." There's no reason why they would have to not believe her. She's admitting that she got paid.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the Aiden will sign the document. It's always the case. If a borrower goes over to two Aiden and say, write me up a shtar and I borrowed money from so-and-so, the lender doesn't have to be there.
So they don't have to see the actual transaction of the Baal giving to his wife whatever money
they
was.
No, they don't. It just says in it, his I received my ksuba.
Like her statement is saying.
Well, that's what it says in the document. Yeah.
Does this, you know, you asked, does this always happen when someone comes in with a shtar?
Oh, so what's the answer to that?
So I have a question related to that question to try to answer it. Does this somehow have to do with Otiyot? That could be. Yeah.
What's that
mean? Not really.
Okay.
Why are we suspicious here? I mean, are we suspicious always?
Maybe because of what she says?
No. This is the significance of Matzah Shogar.
Oh, because it's found.
It was found on the street. It's an important document. Now, it's very possible that people do lose important documents. But if there's something. But once the document has been found on the street, it raises alarm bells. We start worrying about things that otherwise we would never worry about. So ordinarily, if, you know, shtar comes in and it stayed in Nisan, then we assume everything took place in Nisan. We don't start, well, maybe it took place earlier, maybe this, maybe, we don't go through, you know, we have no reason to. But once the shtar was lost, found on the street, well, what's going on? Maybe there's something wrong with the shtar. Maybe there's something off about it. Maybe there's something, you know, that we have to know. And that's why the matzah is significant. We wouldn't be having these fears.
We could just take the husband's word for it without hers?
No, you take her word for it.
Meaning if the shtar, if the shomer was found in his possession, he wants
that's
to say.
Found, he has what
no,
he
no,
found.
If he brings it in to say,
so
hey,
then,
I don't know
her.
And then she claims, no, I never was paid.
Well, then we're going to verify the signatures of the agent, and if they're verified, then there's a legal document. Why does he have it? That must be she paid. I mean, he paid her.
And in this case, if he was found on the street and they verify the signatures, if they found the Adam who were able to testify, would they need her Oda at all?
Say it again.
If they found the Adam who had signed.
All the Adam say is they signed, that's what I was saying to Rachel before, that all they say is that this, the document just says that the woman says to the Adam, I received my payment. They didn't witness the payment.
Well, even so. If
but
those two made him come in and say, hey, she told me that she received
we
her
we know
payment.
That that's what happened.
What?
Because they signed the document. We read the document.
So you need her Oda?
Yeah, the question is, we don't know who lost the document, though. The document's out on the street. Understand? So therefore, this is, so the concern is what? What is our concern? Our concern is, because what is our concern? Our concern is that maybe, as a claim, that maybe she sold it in the ER, but the tzuba wasn't paid, but he didn't pay her until Tishrei. And then what? And then if we return the shomer to the husband, which is David Nisan, he, if the buyers were then to come in saying, you owe us the tzuva, they'll say, what are you talking about? I paid it in Nisan. You have no claim against me. My wife cheated you. Go after her, don't come to me. See what?
Mm-hmm.
That's the fear. And that's what the Gemara is asking, so that even if she admits that the tzuva was paid, why we should not return the shomer to the husband, because maybe this could happen. Is this clear?
Yeah.
What did the Gemara answer? Now the answer, the Gemara's answer, is based on a ruling of Shmuel. So, and what the Gemara's answer basically is that the fact that we don't worry about this, worry about what? Say again what the worry is.
That we don't worry that maybe she sold the ketubah in ER and then she didn't actually get paid until Tishrei, and then if we return the shomer to the husband, then that sale to that lokeach would have been possible.
And the reason why we don't worry about it is because of Shmuel's ruling, and this b'risa, the fact that the b'risa is not worried about it, confirms for us that Shmuel's opinion is authoritative, and that we should accept Shmuel's opinion. Now we need to know what did Shmuel say. So Shmuel doesn't come in until the Gemara is answering the question. Before you get to the answer, Shmuel is not relevant yet. So, can somebody tell me what, I don't want to know how this relates to the case here, I just want to know what Shmuel said. Yes. Tell me what Shmuel said.
The Kedavar is $100 for me. And I can't wait for McKenna to pay it back. I need money now. And I sell my debt to Avital. Which means that McKenna, now when she gets the money, is going to pay directly to Avital.
Correct.
But then I decide one day to forgive McKenna. Saying that McKenna, we're in really good terms, you don't have to pay me. Because I do that,
what's going to happen to
Avital? Is going to lose out on getting paid.
Okay. So what is the most amazing thing? What's amazing here?
Yeah, it's pretty. I can't
believe it. Sounds crazy, right?
Yeah.
It's not fair. I mean, everything.
Yeah. No, Zahava, McKenna owed Zahava $100. So Zahava goes ahead and sells the debt to Avital. still, after she sold the debt, I would think that Zahav is out of the picture. She's not the creditor anymore. Kenneth doesn't owe Zahava any money now because the debt was sold, like my bank, you know. The first bank sold the mortgage to the second bank. After they sold the mortgage, the first bank has no rights. They sold the debt. They're not my creditor anymore. So I would have thought that Zahava is not McKenna's creditor anymore. Who's McKenna's sole creditor? How can Zahava then come back and forgive the debt? What debt? It's not her debt to forgive. What on earth is Shmuel talking about? But that's what Shmuel said. Shmuel said that even though Zahava sold the debt to Avital, until McKenna pays off the debt to Avital, Zahava can be mocho the debt. As strange, as bizarre as that sounds. So I want to explain, I know Rashi didn't go through the explanation of this, because it really sounds really off the wall. Does anybody know the rationale? How do you explain this? Yeah.
I don't know the rationale, but I know that in general, in the Torah, debt is seen as something that should be forgiven. Like, we have Yovel, which is where...
It's all very nice, but Zahava doesn't own the debt to forgive it. The problem is... Avital could forgive.
I don't know the mechanism by which it works. I just know that the Torah in general likes to be lenient about debt.
True, but it's not relevant here. The problem is, Zahava doesn't own the debt to forgive.
Oh, and also that the Torah doesn't recognize, like when you sell something, like when you sell land, that land always returns to you. So maybe when you sell debt, it also.
It's not true. Yes.
Maybe this is something Avital should have recognized from the beginning, that. Is it understood that when you sell debts, there's a risk involved?
Of course there's a risk. What do you mean there's a risk? Well, the only thing is...
Maybe
it means that age is...
No, you're being circular. I'm asking, why can Zahava still be mocked with the debt if she sold the debt?
Maybe it means that, if for some reason, McKenna can't pay back Avital, it falls on Nina.
Mm-hmm. Falls on you.
Because they want to protect... I'm trying to figure out if it protects Avital.
Okay. Yeah.
So the way that I understood it,
it's really hard to guess at this.
Which Rashi is it?
Part,
it's not in any Rashi.
It's not Rashi.
He just probably went out.
Two-part mechanism. The first is that there's a shtar chov between McKenna and Zahava, and
yes.
Then there's a kinyan between Zahava and Avital, but such that she's paying her for something, but that Zahava, the shtar chov between Zahava and McKenna still exists.
Why? That's what I'm trying to find out.
To protect Avital.
We need to protect.
So that this doesn't happen. So then, like,
on
the
contrary,
situation.
Because if once
you
sell it,
I don't know, but I feel like it's
something
that's
going
on.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe because since Avital and McKenna have no connection, they're.
Avital and McKenna shouldn't do. Once I have sold the debt to Avital, Avital is now McKenna's creditor.
But like McKenna and Avital themselves have had no, like they have made no kinyan or no interaction.
Well, they don't have to. Zahava sold it to Avital.
But Zahava's name is still on the shtar, right?
Okay.
But it was the same thing as the ketubah.
Yeah, so what?
So what if now, let's say McKenna owed Zahava $100, but McKenna knew like Zahava didn't need it right away, and now that
Zahava
Avital has it,
sold the debt.
Right, but now Avital is coming after McKenna to return the money to her today.
So then that's something that McKenna will have to work out with Avital.
But so maybe we don't want McKenna to be in that position.
Therefore, we do what? Let some stranger mocha the debt.
Not some stranger. Zahava was the original.
So what? She's no longer the creditor.
But there's been like no exchange. Like there's.
No. Yes.
Maybe she rented the debt.
She who?
She rented the debt.
Rents it? No, can't rent the debt.
She doesn't take care of it.
That would be a
thing
that
you can. That's what I mean.
You're just having a little bit of fun.
But you're trying, so let me. I'm just letting you talk, McKenna. Yes.
I don't know if someone already, like, if someone already said this, but because Zahava was like the original predator.
Why does that matter?
It matters because okay, even though she sold Avital the debt, since she was the original owner, it seems like she still has some, like, power almost over Avital.
That's what we're trying to figure out. What kind of a business is that? If she sold the debt, what did she have?
Maybe she's just borrowing from me until she gets it.
She sold the debt. She didn't rent it, she didn't buy it, she sold the debt. That's the case. You're right, McKenna, but you have to give it a frame. You have to be able to.
She still has legal ownership.
But
Taurus.
Why?
Because it was over to her and not to somebody else.
Could it be they were, okay, I could be throwing in something.
The last one, then I'll just...
Could it be that they were a dean?
No. But it may have to do with it.
I don't know, maybe it gives the.
The problem is the harvest sold the debt. She doesn't have the debt anymore. How could she be multiple of debt that she doesn't have?
Because the debt was always owed to her in the first place.
So what?
That so was usually,
the
it was
now
owed.
It
was owed to her, and then in this, and then she
sold
it.
If I own this book and I sell it to you, it's still my book.
No, but in this case, she sold it in the sense that when it would be paid, it would be paid to her, and then she would transfer ownership.
No, that's not it. She sold the debt. All right. Yes.
I don't know. Is it that, like, that sale was kind of intended to be maybe more of like a temporary fix, and that technically, like,
there was no, she sold the debt to the Avital, period. Okay, yeah.
Okay, is it maybe because when Zahava sells the debt to Avital, she sells it for less than it's worth?
It doesn't matter, she's buying the debt. The debt is $100 debt, she's selling it for $75, let's say.
But look, when you sell someone a book, you're getting the full value of the book. You're not getting the full value.
That's the full value at the present time.
Can you give us a hint?
Okay. No.
Right,
let me explain what this. This is a big issue that we show them. See, it's not here. They don't, you know. You have to track down Shmuel's halacha where else it's cited, because it's cited in many places.
It comes up a lot.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, look at the Musaras Hashas.
Silvas,
yeah. Kedushin, Babakama, Babakasa, it's cited in many places. I don't know in which of those places we show them. Where they, you know. But this is what Harishonim explained this halakha. Now, in order to understand it, we have to introduce two concepts. One of them is called what we call a Shibud Haguf. Shibud spelled Shin Ayin Beis Vav Dalet. It's what we call a Shibud Haguf. And the other concept is called a Shibud Nechasim. Now, what are these two concepts to follow? We're talking exclusively about debts. That's what we're talking about now. Actually, it's according to it.
So we can think about it?
Okay, can anybody... I'll just tell you what these two terms mean.
Okay.
And you see if you can... What is a Shiva Haguf?
You're saying that you owe work.
Not work.
We're talking about
the
action.
A
physical object.
Shibud is referring to the debt. The person who owes me the money, the person himself or herself is indebted to me. Shibud nechasim means. All the property that the borrower owns is also indebted to me, too.
Is that like a lien?
Yeah, which is what a lien is. So let's use the term lien. Shiva Agub is I have a lien, so to speak, on the body of the person who owes me the money. I don't mean it literally. Almost as though the person is what to me?
A slave.
Like a slave.
Exactly.
The person owes me money. It's like a personal debt. It's on the person. And then, because of that debt to the person, what else does the creditor have?
Right.
that all your possessions that you have, your house, your fields, your jewelry, your furniture, everything, even the shirt on your back, everything that you own is in a sense mortgaged to me to pay off the debt. Let's say if it's a $100,000 debt, there are two things that occur immediately when you borrow from me $100,000. There's a Shiva that goes, you owe me $100,000. It's on you. And secondly, all your property, there's a lien on all your property to pay off the $100,000 debt.
Can you sometimes have the second one without the first?
That's what I want you now to
say. So why can't Avital?
I'm not saying more.
Is Avital able to cancel?
Can
I get the phone number to reach your wife, please?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. 201.
This is
going to
be on
Y-Utopia. Oh, so you don't have to. Oh, once again. 201, everyone. No.